Okay, so this is Parshat Bo, and we're moving towards the end. Before I started, I was asked some questions regarding the entire process, and one thing I said is, yeah, you have to keep in mind, as the plagues are playing themselves out, to realize that there has to be some kind of real specific, real well-developed plan which is going on. Because again, one thing that we know perfectly well, if God wanted to take them out, it just, you know, wills it and they're out. It's not complicated, it's not difficult, and it's something which should be the easiest thing in the world. So the opposite is true. The fact that it's going slowly and deliberately and there's a whole process which is taking place, that's the part which is more interesting. Okay, so then we have to ask ourselves, as we're watching this, we have to ask ourselves then a very simple question. So for whose benefit is this? Is this for the benefit, and that word is a funny word I'm using in this context, is this for the benefit of Paro and for Mitzrayim, or is this for the benefit of Am Yisrael? And my basic answer to that question would be both, is that it has to be necessary for both. And then that's part of what we have to keep in mind, that when we learn that Am Yisrael fell to the 49th level of Tuma, so what does that mean? It means that they, to a certain extent, have internalized the whole Egyptian system. So therefore, as we're watching the plagues take place and play themselves out, so this is what I mentioned beforehand. Some of the plagues seem to be designed, and I'm not talking about yet a philosophical side to them. That's a whole other side. But they seem to be designed on a simplest level of either giving punishment. So let's pause there before I finish that. When I say punishment, you know, the big question that everybody asked in last week's parsha, so, or you can ask it this week as well, what happened to free will? I mean, what happens to, I mean, when it says that God hardens his heart or whatever, so what happens to Paro's free will? So the best answer, at least the one that I like the most to that, is the answer which is found in the Sfarno, that, and he says it very tersely, so I want to break it down and say it a lot more clearer than I think that he says it. What does Paro want? Which means deep down, what does he want? What would make Paro happy? So is the answer, let the Jews go, or is the answer to hold on to them? So the answer is to hold on to them. So therefore, what does his Bechir Chafshis tell him to do? What does his free will tell him to do? What does he do out of his free will? The answer is, hold on to the Jews. Now he has a problem. And what's the problem? That God keeps using leverage on him, and he keeps using lots of force on him, and he smacks him one way, he smacks him the other way, and then he can go through all the plagues. Now what do the plagues do, therefore? They take away his free will. And they prevent him from doing what he wants to do, which means he could be a broken man because of the plagues. Because of the Makos, he can now say, okay, just go already, enough, must speak. Or if he spoke Arabic, khalas, that's it, go. So therefore, by God hardening his heart, what then happens? He gives him back his free will and allows him to do that which he wants to do. So, yafeh, that I think is the best answer, it's the easiest answer. On top of that, you can note what's noted in Midrash Rabbah, that it's by the first five makos, it talks about Paro hardening his own heart and being stubborn, and by the second five, it talks about God hardening his heart. So there I can say that what do I see by the first five? That's what he wants. He wants to harden his heart. But what happens? He starts breaking. Listen, it's not easy. He starts breaking. And as he starts breaking, so what does God do? He doesn't take away his Bechir Chafshis. What does he do? He gives him his Bechir Chafshis by giving him the ability to not be intimidated based upon the plagues. All this you knew? What I just now said? Was it what I just now said?
Yes.
Why didn't you like it? First of all, it's Emes, but why didn't you like it? Right. So that's another approach that I think is completely valid, and I think it's pshat in Chumash as well. I think it's absolute pshat that the reason why he keeps saying no, which God says he's going to keep saying no, why? In order that I can give more punishments. It says it black and white a number of times. I think that's absolutely correct. But that doesn't really deal with the question of the free will. When I'm by saying it this way, you've also solved the free will conundrum. So that's why I think that it ends up working out well. So you still don't like it, or
no,
it all comes down to who says it, not what's... Why? I wrote it years ago someplace. You should read my books. I think I wrote it in my first book. But it was very good there also. But no, but it's the Sforno. As I said, the Sforno doesn't spell it out as clearly as I just now said it. But I'm pretty sure that it's pshat in the Sforno. So I couldn't then say, like you wanted to say, what I heard you say, is that the plagues are designed to give him his punishment. Now, the punishment itself takes different faces to it. Some of the punishments are there in order to give him physical discomfort. Essentially saying, this is the way Rabbi Soloveitchik said it, essentially saying, oh, you want slaves and you're going to cause them physical discomfort? Let me give you some physical discomfort. The other plagues, what we find, are designed in order to give him economic pain, to lose money, to lose resources. And that, again, Rabbi Soloveitchik said that is the flip side of it. Oh, you want a slave in order to work for you to help your economic situation, so I'm going to hurt your economic situation, which means both of these then become quid pro quo, or if you're yeshivish, how would you say it? Mida keneged mida, of directly dealing with it. But I do think there's another two elements at least. And the two other elements are, one of them is political, in terms of what political impact all this has. And that's really quite important, and we ignore that sometimes. And the other one is theological. Now, the theological side, I think I pointed out, if not last week, 2 weeks ago, I don't remember when, but the plagues themselves, if you don't understand Egyptian mythology, then you miss what's going on. And I'm convinced the opposite is true. The more you'd understand Egyptian mythology, the more you would appreciate what's going on in the plague. So therefore, when Chazal pointed out, and that was the Haftarah for last week, that Paro claims that he created, he's the god of the Nile, and now start counting how many of these plagues come from the Nile, or so therefore with the Nile rebelling against him, right, the frogs come from the Nile, or when the Nile gets turned to blood for the Egyptian sensibility, it's as if the Nile is being stabbed and the god of the Nile is dying and it's all turning into blood. So again, for the primitive mind watching this, who may have bought into this whole Egyptian mythology, they're watching or witnessing something which is absolutely unbelievable, which is taking place. Now, there is a Rashi which is absolutely astounding. So let's take a quick look at this Rashi. When there is like this moment of serious negotiations, or it sounds like serious negotiations, and Paro says, okay, who's going? Just, okay, bottom line, who's going to be leaving? So that's in Perek. So Perek Yud, starting with, the Pasuk you came to me before with, Perek Yud Pasuk Zayin, Vayomer Avdi Paro Elov, Ad Matai Yezel Lanu Lamokesh, Shlachet Anashim, Vayavduot Hashem Elokehim. Haterim Tedaki of Domitrayim. So that itself is an unbelievable dialogue, because Paro's own servants, Avdei Paro, Paro's own servants are now telling him what to do. I mean, do you remember the back of the scene when Paro has the dream? Like all the way back by Yosef, Paro has a dream, and it says that all of his interpreters are afraid to tell him what they think that it means, that there's fear over there. Over here, his servants are telling him, what are you doing? Which itself tells you or indicates some kind of unraveling. Vayushav et Moshe, that's a very funny term. Vayushav et Moshe et Aaron. El Paro. What does that mean? Vayushav? They were returned. Do you realize what that means? A number of them first say what I'm about to say. It doesn't say Paro summoned them. It doesn't say that Paro asked them to come in. Vayushav, they were returned. So why is this language, why is it phrased this way? Who returned them? Who told them to come? Paro's servants. Paro said, go. And what did his servants say? Come back. Right? We Egypt's lost already. Which means, by the way, right here you see that there's something really, really bad going on from Paro's perspective. So Paro calls, so they get called back. But you shav at Moshe Aaron El Paro, but Yom Leim, Lachuv do it, Hashem Lokeim, Mi Vimi Elchim, which means now he's listening to his servants, who's going? Vayomer Moshe ben Arenu v'zakneinu nelech. By the way, what did his servant say? Shalach et ha'anashim v'yavdu et Hashem. Look at him. Send the men. He didn't, by the way, even the servants never said. So it's actually very funny here, because he said, who's going? Because his servants only gave him a man. Right? You all realize how funny this is now? His servants only gave him a mandate to tell that the men can go. So who's going? Vayomer Moshe ben Arenu v'zakneinu nelech b'vaneinu v'noteinu b'tzonei v'koreinu nelech ki chag Hashem lanu. Vayomer aleihem. This is Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud. Listen carefully. Vayomer aleihem yehi chen Hashem imochem ker asher ashalach etchem v'etabchem Re'u, ki ra'a neged p'neichem. Go ahead, translate it. Go ahead, use the English. Pasuk Yud. Ki ra'a neged p'neichem. He says, yeah, you go, but it's not going to work out well for you. By the way, is Paro doing this because Paro is just really so friendly with him? Or Paro is actually bothered by a number of things. And I want to go back to the political level. If Moshe takes men and women, children, males and females and everybody, what is the indication of this? That there is no... It's not what you think. No, it's worse than what you think. You think they're just snaking out. It's worse than that. Egypt is a society which is based upon different social strata. Why do they need slaves so badly? So Egypt, and this will help you understand the firstborn also. Egypt is a society which is based upon what's called primogeniture, which means that in each family, the firstborn, he's in charge of that family. And each firstborn of each family is in charge of that. By the way, the visual representation of this is actually a pyramid, which means the pyramids become a physical manifestation or representation of the Egyptian economic system, where each person is standing upon the back of somebody lower than him, which gives him his position that he's in. When Moshe says, we're all going, what's he then saying? We're all equal. What's Paro's point? Okay, the men should go. The men go and daven. The men go and pray. What are you talking about the women go? What are you talking about the children go? This is what he's saying. This is bad what you're doing. Who is it bad for? It goes back to the unraveling of the system, which now we realize right before this was attested to by virtue of the fact that his own servants are now telling him what to do. So that's what I'm pointing out. There's also a whole political level of this. Now listen to this Rashi, because as I said, this Rashi is astounding. Rashi writes, Re'u ki ra'a neged p'neichem. So which word is Rashi focused on? The word is ra'a. Ki targumo. First thing he says, whatever the targum says, that's what this means. U'midrash agada shamati, which is also interesting, I didn't even see it, I heard that there is a midrash that says, Kochav echad yesh, there is a particular star, sheshmo ra'a, who's called ra'a. Now I have to pause here for a second. If any of you go on Wikipedia and look up Egyptian deities or look up Ra, you'll find that Ra is one of the Egyptian gods. It's the sun god. Rashi just made reference to the sun god. Okay? Now, do you notice how interesting this is? I'm not even going to bother reading the rest of this right now. Although Rashi does say one thing, sorry, which is really interesting. I'm sorry, we'll read a little bit more. Paro says that he sees through his astrologers, or those who understand the constellations, Reni be'itstarganit, Nutchili, Otokochav ole lekratam v'midbar, v'hu siman dam v'hariga, u'kishachatu Yisrael ba'egel, u'vikesha kodesh baruch l'argam, ama Moshe b'tifa, lama yom b'mitzrayim le'mar, v'ra'ahu tziyam l'ragotam b'harim. Everyone's going to say that Ra succeeded, which means the threat over here that Paro uses, that Ra is going to come and kill them, Moshe pulls it on God later on in order to argue back. Don't do anything to the Jews, else they're going to say that Paro was right. So that's right. Again, that's not me, and that's Rashi right over here. So now, I'm going to remind you of one more fact. What is Ra the god? It's the sun god. If you want, you can easy to find a picture of it and representations of it. What happens right after this? Well... Very good. No. It's very good. But it's actually not immediately afterwards. Immediately afterwards is Arbeh. But what does it say by the Arbeh? Pasuk Tesvav. It says, Ve'yichas es ein kol ha'aretz ve'tichshach ha'aretz. So everything goes dark. Then what comes afterwards? Choshech. So it's so interesting now. The next two plagues take place in the dark. So now again, I'm not putting words in Rashi's mouth. I'm just taking Rashi and just going a little bit further, knowing what we know. And as I said, it really is interesting to say that Paro over here, sitting in darkness, is frightening. You know, when we were all kids, so what did we learn? We learned that it's dark and afraid. It was darkness you can feel. Right? The Gemara says this in Pesachim. It was so dark they were afraid to leave their houses. Whatever. It's much worse than that. Right? You realize now, it's much worse than that. It's rather another one of Paro's claims. Just like the Nile being turned into blood, over here, it's Paro now has to deal with his reputation. And what's his reputation? His reputation is that he's the sun god, and look at this, there's no sun. Going 3 days when the sun never comes up for the sun god is bad news. And as I said, there's foreshadowing of that already by the previous one. When it gets so filled with Arbe, it gets so dark, and now hold it, where's the sun? What happened to the sun? So just in case he didn't catch it then, which is immediately after this thing of Ra'ah, he's warning them about Ra'ah, and therefore the next thing happens is, hold it, where's the sun? I don't see the sun right now. What's going on here? And going from that into the sun god. Now, I do have to add, right, is this part good? Do you have questions or no? No questions?
That's good.
Okay. So you move from that, and then you go into the actual leaving of Egypt, which is Perek Yudbet. Now, just to keep a couple of things in mind, and then, again, we'll see how much we could, how much we'll get to this. How clear are we on the sequence of events? Okay. So the beginning of Perek Yudbet is Rashi already referenced it in the very first pasuk of the Torah, right? Rashi said this is where the Torah should have begun, which is actually quite strange, and I want to hold on to that point for you. Know which Rashi I'm referring to, right? Bereishis Bara Elokim. So why are we starting here? So Rashi says, should have started by Chodesh Lelechem. So it's very strange. Meaning if the purpose of is really mitzvos, why are these mitzvos being given at this point? Why not wait for Har Sinai? Which means, why was it so important? Vayomer Hashem Moshe v'al Aaron be'eretz Yisrael leimor, ha'chodesh hazeh lachem rosh chodeshim rishon lachem l'chodshei hashana. This is the beginning of the months. You missed everything good already said. This is the beginning of the months. Okay. The Jewish calendar has weeks, months, and years. Weeks, or days, weeks, months, and years. Days and weeks are based upon the sun. Sunrise, sunset. It just continues that way forever. Every seventh day of Shabbos, that's based upon the sun. What about the Jewish years? What are they based on? No. So again, I deliberately skipped the months. The months are based upon the moon, and that's what we're going to read over here. What about the years? So the years are lunar years modified by, it's actually lunar months modified by solar years, right? The differential between the two is 354 versus 364, each of them, and change. This is essentially a 10, more or less, plus, minus, differential between them. So the Jewish year is modified by the solar year. Otherwise, we would lose 10 days a year, which you do lose 10 days each year, right? You want to figure out when your birthday is, you know, the Jewish calendar versus the general calendar, you just have to take off 10 days. You'll find that's when it is the following year. Until you get to a leap year will then fix it. But if there was never any fixing it, then after 3 years, you're going to lose a month, right? And so on and so forth, like the Muslim calendar does, because it never gets fixed by the solar. Yeah? But just remember, we have a calendar today which is already manipulated. But essentially, we have lunar months. So lunar months are going to produce a year of 354 days.
I'm saying it's not only 354, it's also 353.
Right, but I'm saying the average is going to be 354. It's going to depend on Malin Chaser. Then we have a calendar which is going to manipulate things in order to create a more complete calendar. But if you follow 29 and a half days, what's 29 and a half times 12? Okay, I don't know either. Just say 354, because it better be the right answer. Okay, so I guess that's why all of you are here. Okay, so I'm sure someone will look it up. By the way, you realize I'm going to get an email like in 6 weeks from now and say, I can't believe you're off by 15. What's the matter with you?
Yeah,
Is it for real? So we're right, it's 354? So it had to be 354. Of course it was 354. But by the way, the Vilna Gaon says something unbelievable. He says that the Aseres Yemei Tshuva are the 10 days that make up between the solar and the lunar calendars. He says, that's what he says. What do you want from me? He says, because again, if you think about it, every single year, if you follow if you follow 365 days, let's just make sure we say this right. If you follow 365 days, what was, are we going to get right or wrong? What was Rosh Hashanah 1 year is Yom Kippur the next year. Does that make any sense?
No.
Damn. No, why do you say it doesn't make sense?
9 days.
So he says it's 10 because he includes both days. He includes Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. He says 10 days. So, so therefore, the Aseres Yimei Tshuva, according to him, are those makeup days. It's the makeup days, and that meaning they're not part of the calendar. They're not part of this year, they're not part of last year. That's really what the problem is. Aseres Yimei Tshuva, they're part of the new year or the old year. When you do tshuva during the, there's a whole thing on the Rambam on this. If you do tshuva during Aseres Yimei Tshuva, does it help you? Yeah. What if you do another mitzvah? The Rambam seems to imply the only thing you can do to break the tie at the end of the year is by doing tshuva. Why can't you do another mitzvah? So there's some who say, no, you do another mitzvah, it's not going to help you for last year. It's going to help you for next year. But you're already going to hell for last year. You're in trouble. Right? According to the Gra, it's not the case. According to the Gra, if you do a mitzvah, it's going to help you. The Gra actually says you should say Kiddush Levana. He says you should say Kiddush Levana, which is very interesting because this is exactly what he's talking about. But or for that matter, also brought down, you should start building your sukkah already during Aseres Tshuva. Again, it's a big machlokas, you should wait afterwards, whatever. I know you all know what the Ramah says. But according to the Gra, those days are there in order to make up for the differential between the solar and the lunar calendars, and therefore those days are really like no man's land, as it were. But those days, therefore, are Kadosh Baruch Hu's chesed, and therefore they help make up for the previous year. And therefore, even though the new year begins every Rosh Hashanah, the old year doesn't end until Yom Kippur. Does that make any sense? Maybe. Okay. So, Vayomer Hashem Moshe ve'el Aaron be'eretz Yitzrayim lamer. So the first thing that you hear, how many times have you ever heard a pasuk? Vayomer Hashem Moshe lamer. V'deber Hashem Moshe lamer. All the time. So here you throw Aaron in also. Okay, good. Aaron. Okay, fits in more enough. But Eretz Mitzrayim, that's a little unusual. So you have to say, okay, why? HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. This is the first month of the year. Rishon Hu Lachem L'Chodshei Hashanah. This is the beginning of the calendar. By the way, what's strange? We think Rosh Hashanah is in... When's the new year? When's Rosh Hashanah? So what does he say? The first month... And by the way, consistently throughout the Chumash, when's the first month? Nisan. So what's the answer? Anybody ever learned the first mission Rosh Hashanah knows there's more than one Rosh Hashanah. So for us, in our world today, because we don't connect to anything in the mission or the Gemara, in our world today, you say, when's the new year? So what's the answer? When's the new year? Depends who's asking the question. If it's a baseball player, when's the new year? The beginning of April. The year begins in April. Right? If you're a football player. Okay. So that's why there's baseball, there's football, there's basketball. That's why there's Arba Rosh Hashanahim also in terms of... Or the school year, when does the school year begin? Which means different things have different beginnings. The Jewish year begins in the spring, which makes a lot of sense. The spring is when everything comes to life. In the fall, everything is dying. In the spring, everything comes to life. So spring is with the beginning of the year. That's what told here. Can you tell me why in the world are we getting this mitzvah right now? Kodesh Baruch Hu couldn't wait till we get to Har Sinai to give us this mitzvah? Why in Eretz Mitzrayim are we getting this mitzvah? So that's the first question. Continue. Dabru kol das Yisrael emor. No, we're doing it the other way today. Darbru el kol adat Yisrael lemor be'asol lechodesh zeh rechu lahem ish selavet avot selavayit ve'imim atabayit miyot miseh. Okay, basically everybody get a lamb. Good. Too much, not enough people in your house, bring in your neighbors. Excellent. Pasuk hey. Set tamim, what kind of animal? Wonderful. Pasuk vav, v'yolachem lemishmeret, put it aside, guard it, ad arba asar yom lechodesh hazeh. So now apparently the answer to my first question, why we need there to be a calendar, is because we need to know to take it on the 10th and then put it away till the 14th. By the way, this is not a good answer, because I could have just said, God said to Moshe, count to 10, and then count to another 4. I didn't need there to be the whole mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh at this point. Okay, what are you going to do on the 4th? V'shachatu oto kol kata Yisrael ben Arbayim. So what do? You kill the Passover lamb. By the way, there is a lot to talk about in terms of the Egyptians worshipping the lamb, and killing this was also killing one of their gods, and therefore that itself would have been cathartic and would have been part of leaving Egypt. Take the blood, put it on the doorposts. Good. Posachet. Now this is the one you should pay attention to, because I want you to be able to say something on Pesach night. You can tell your parents you made this up. I was in yeshiva, I was thinking, whatever. Fine. And that night you eat the Korban Pesach. Is that good? That makes sense? What about the next part? Tzli'esh. You should eat it roasted. That makes sense? Okay, why roasted? Okay, good. That's a good question. Why roasted? Hold on to that. Tzli'esh u'matzot amorim yochlu. And how do you eat it? Eat it together with matzah and mar. Anybody have a question? Okay. On Pesach night, you're going to take the matzah in your hand. Or you'll point at it, depending on your custom. You're going to say, matzah zu al shum ma. Right? Right? Whoever doesn't say three things does not fulfill their obligation. Which obligation? Smachloket. But you don't. Let's just say you don't fulfill your obligation. The question is, obligation of Sipur Tzimtzumayim or obligation even of Achila? There's a Ramban in the Milchama someplace that says it's even Achila. But let's just say it's Sipur Tzimtzumayim. If you don't say these three things, you don't fulfill it. So now help me. Matzah zu al shum ma? Why are we eating matzah? What's the answer? What do we say? Because when the Jews left, they left Kippur Chipzon. We left so quickly, we didn't have time for the bread to rise. Anybody have a question? Two weeks before, they were told, have a matzah, have a bake sale. 2 weeks before, you had the shul selling matzahs over there and making money. I'm saying, look at it. It says it right here, black and white. Let's say, that's not. Is this a fair question or not a fair question at all? Those of you who aren't sure, this is a very good question. It doesn't mean that there's no answer to it, but it means. But this is a very good question. Why in the world do we say we eat the matzah? Because we left so quickly, had no time for the matzah to rise, and that's why we eat it by the Seder, when the Jews ate matzah at the Seder the day before they left, and God gave them 2 weeks beforehand to bake the matzahs. Fair question? I'm not going to say take off your yarmulke kind of question. At least I don't think. But this is certainly a fair question. So what's the answer? That's it.
The question is, why did the answer this? That was...
It's true the Jews left in the morning so quickly, and it's true they left so quickly that they didn't have time for the bread to rise, but it's also true that the night that they ate the Korban Pesach together with matzah and maror. One second. They ate the Korban Pesach with matzah and maror the night before they left, and God gave them 2 weeks to get it ready. Rosh Chodesh, 10 days, 4 days, do this. They had 2 weeks to get their matzahs ready. So you're going to tell me, why do you eat matzahs? Because we left so quickly. I'm going to ask you, why did they eat matzahs? Because they were commanded. Okay, so that's what we should say.
Good.
You get yeshiva shami, you say, no, there's a difference between Pesach Mitzrayim, Pesach Ladoros. Pesach Mitzrayim, they ate it because it was a chok. And then you can even say better, and then say, but the reason for eating it was only mizgala afterwards. But if that's the case, but if Pesach Mitzrayim was different Pesach Hadoros, then why have them eat matzah? Just have matzah, Pesach Hadoros. Why have it, the Pesach Mitzrayim? I'm just saying, the question is a fair question, and look, if you really appreciate it, good questions are much better than good answers. I know you don't think it. You like good answers, but good questions are much better. Because you get a good question, you can give 10 different answers on it over the years. You think of more answers, better answers than what I'm going to tell you. So this is a good question. This is absolutely a fair question because it's black and white in the text. And you have to find some way to nuance it, some way to try to make a differential or say, okay, what's going on? So let's try this. When did the Jews actually leave Egypt? Or say it a little differently, when was Yetzias Mitzrayim? Was it that night? Was it the next day? Was it 3 days later? Was it 7 days? When did the Jews leave Egypt? When is Yetzias Mitzrayim? By the way, I want to rephrase that. When was Yetzias Mitzrayim? When was Geulas Mitzrayim? Yeah, that's what you just decided for any reason? It just sounded good. So there's no geula. Okay, I'm easy. Whatever you want. So when did they actually leave? What? When did they leave Egypt? At 12 noon. How do you know? Light of day, but it didn't say 12 noon. So it says 12 noon. I don't recall it saying 12 noon. They left in the morning. Okay. Go through the sequence of the night. Right, first of the month, get stuff ready. 10th of the month, go find your animal. 14th of the month, do the Shechita. When? Late in the day. By the way, Pesach, throughout the Torah, right, Lashon Mikra Lachud, Lashon Chacham Lachud, Pesach in the Chumash only refers to the time that you bring the Korban Pesach and you eat the Korban Pesach. The seven-day holiday is never referred to as Pesach in the Chumash. You can check up on this, look at every single case. Pesach is from the time that you bring the Korban Pesach till the time you can eat the Korban Pesach. When can you eat the Korban Pesach too? Till? It's Machlokas. That's Machlokas in Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Can you eat it until midnight, which is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, or can you eat it until the morning? What's the halacha? Sure. So when you say the morning, you're right. Because Machlokas Rabbi Kiva v'chaverov, halacha to Rabbi Akiva. So halacha should be like Rabbi Akiva. We're machmir to try to do like Elazar ben Azariah. So the whole chit, so if the mitzvah of eating it, stay with me, if the mitzvah of eating it is only till midnight, so then the mitzvah of Sipri Tzitzrayim is only till midnight as well. So the whole chiddush that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, you know, all of them were sitting together, B'nei Brak is Makom Rabbi Akiva, and then they sat and they were Osek B'Sipri Tzitzrayim until the morning, until the Tamidim came and said, it's time for, that means they were Osek the entire night. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was with them as well, so you can say that either that he was molded to Rabbi Akiva, or you can say he was b'malkum Rabbi Akiva, or you can say whatever you want to say. But I'm saying that issue is part of the same issue. So let's try it again. Pesach is from the time you bring the Korban Pesach until the time you finish eating the Korban Pesach, and that's the time there's mitzvah Sipri Tzitzrayim. Good. When did the Jews actually leave? So what did we decide? They left in the morning. So let's go back again. So let's go through the sequence of that night. They ate the Korban Pesach. What happened that night at midnight? V'yehi b'chatzos halayla is not when Pesach is over. Something else happened at midnight. And what was that? That was Makos Bechoros. So again, Makos Bechoros goes back to the very Egyptian political system. It goes to the very political system that the leader in each house is the Bechor. Bechor in every house dies. By the way, there's a Medrash in Tehillim which gets them a little bit better even. It's based on in the Halagadu, Kilam Chasto. So there it says that they were struck by their firstborn. So one of the Peshatim that I found there says that they were devastated by the death of the firstborn. Why? Because it says that in every family the firstborn died. But it says either the firstborn of the mother or of the father. And it says there were lots of homes that the husband did not know that his second, third, and fourth child were also firstborns because they weren't really his. So therefore, the third child dies, and he turns to his wife and starts like throttling her, like, why did this kid die? What's the matter? So again, the Midrash spells this out really, really, really say that they were struck by their firstborn, that the firstborn, again, brought a further disintegration of Egypt. But the real disintegration is in terms of the leadership. And I said that goes right back to this image of the pyramid. Okay. So Egypt is falling apart. Now, every single Israeli kid, doesn't make a difference, religious school, non-religious school, every single little Israeli kid knows the same song, that as soon as midnight strikes, firstborn start dying, and Paro comes out looking for Moshe. You know the song?
I never heard that song.
You don't know the song? I didn't say the song yet, but you don't know it. Are you Israeli? You were born here? So you know, see, you went to kindergarten here? You skipped? No, some others do. But if you skipped kindergarten, you thought that you didn't miss anything. Not going to kindergarten here, you miss something. Anyway, the song goes something to the effect, Paro be pajama be emtza halayla. Okay, so you know it. Baruch Hashem. It's America. It made it to America. Stop. Paro be pajama be emtza halayla. So what's, by the way, seriously? On Pesach night, you should have your pajamas right ready, and you should jump out and say, "I'm right where you get to that. I'm Paro, right? I'm in pajamas until I like." You have to make this thing alive. You got to wake people up. You got four cups of wine working against you. What? So Paro comes running around in his pajamas, running around looking for Moshe. And what does Paro say? Oh, what does Paro? Okay, what does Paro say? Go. Maspik, right? Chalas. Go. Out. What does Moshe say? Say, no. One second. Do you realize the significance of this? The moment that Moshe says no, that's what makes him free. right? Yeah. Pyro says, go. He says, no, I'm not going. That is the independence, which means, that's why I rephrased it a couple of times. I asked on the one hand, when did the Jews leave Egypt? On the other hand, they asked, when were they liberated from Egypt? When was the Geula from Mitzrayim? When did they become free? So when are they free? They're free. At midnight, they're free. At midnight, they're free. Why? Because Pharaoh's running around in his pajamas saying, go, go, go. And we're saying, no. Now, can anybody tell me something much sharper about this? Or you already have you completely confused? Tell me something much sharper now. Why wait for the day to go? Why? Good. So all Egypt can see. Good. What else? So first of all, let's go in order. First of all, it's not dignified. Or you want to go? It's not. Yeah. Are we like thieves? Right. That's the way the Medrash says. Are we like thieves? We go in the night. It's not dignified. We're going to go in the day. So now, what did I say? Which was a little sharper than that, by saying no. At that moment, they anyway become free by defying what power wants. Now say something better than that, even. Now say something better than that, even. By, again? Good, but better, better, better. Did that sound better, or that was just good? Better. So good. Okay, good. You need to take the things that you never underestimate, you know, pillaging. Pillaging is important. There's a, right? Only question is why they didn't do it during the blackout. I mean, that's the main hook in America. There's a blackout. Then you go take everything from the store. So I don't know where they got this funny thinking from. Yeah? Exactly. I set you up for this. I don't know where you got lost along the way. The whole thing about, remember the sun god? Or we already forgot that. Which means for them to go out in the middle of the night and still, you know, somehow they got the sun god. No, we're going out during the day. We're walking out during the day. Now, and I'm going to ask you again. Who is that for? Is that for the Jews or is that for the Egyptians? Okay, I'll give you two guesses then. Is that for the Jews or is that for the Egyptians? Okay, I'll give you three guesses then. Is that for the Jews or is that for the Egyptians? I would think that's for the Jews. The Egyptians, forget about the Egyptians. The Jews need to know that there's no, that the big, big sun god can't do anything. We can walk out during the day. We don't have to listen. It's not going to make a difference. We can do whatever we want to do. It's even better. I'm saying it's, but when they finally walk out, it can't, meaning to turn the sun into darkness. You know, we beat him up. You know, we got him beat. Whatever. No, but to walk out during the, there's nothing here. It's just the sun. Nothing to do with Paro. Can't do anything to you. I'm saying that becomes a much stronger message. But that's what I'm saying. I think the Jews needed that. That's part of becoming free of the Memtes Shari Tuma, becoming free from this way they must have looked at the world as well, which is the way that the Egyptians looked at the world. Good? Okay, but I think there's another level. I think there's another level to this. In his Vikuach, in the disputation at Barcelona, the Ramban says something which I think deserves a lot more attention than it gets, and I'm going to try to explain it and then try to develop it a little bit. So he's debating with this former Jew, quote-unquote, Pablo Christiani, who's claiming that through Chazal he's going to prove that that Mashiach already came, and he had the very, very, meaning for him it was a good career move in terms of the church to move up. I'm going to defeat the, but he had a real disadvantage is that he's debating the Ramban. I mean, the Ramban was not your local Reform rabbi. I mean, no offense, really no offense. The Ramban isn't even your local Orthodox rabbi. The Ramban knew everything. I mean, it's very clear from the writings of the Ramban. He never misses anything. He doesn't miss any arguments he can bring out. There's never a better svara he could have said. There wasn't a marker that he... The Ramban is this combination of total knowledge of Judaism and total sharpness. I mean, are you kidding me? Are you going to start arguing Gemaras with the Ramban? Like, please, or Fu Shlema. I know what Pablo Christiani's mother's name is, Aser Mishaberach for him. It's just crazy. It's craziness. So you have to feel, I'm Amish, I feel bad for him. Like, you're going to beat the Ramban in a debate. So he starts and saying, you know, according to Mashiach is going to, you know, I think he's already here. There's a Medrash that says that the time of the destruction, Mashiach was born, so therefore Jesus was born here and here, so therefore it must be that Jesus is Mashiach. So Ramban says, what do you say about that? So he says, it's a metaphor. Goes that when there's destruction, there's hope. Well, I'm going to come back to that. When there's destruction, there's hope. That's all that it means. It's not meant to be literally. And he said, and even if you say he's born then, he says he's going to die. So and if you want to say it's literal, so fine, it's literal. So Mashiach today is 1,200 years old, he said. Fine, doesn't bother me any. He goes, well, are you expecting me to believe man lived that long? No, he goes, I don't expect you to believe that, but I think the whole thing is a metaphor. I don't think it's literal. He goes, you want to quote Gemaras, and you know how to quote a Gemara. Gemara uses metaphors. Gemara uses allegory. Gemara uses all kinds of other things. So as I said, this guy had this real profound misfortune to debate the Ramban. And then the Ramban says to him, he says, you know, you've basically done something which is absurd. And incidentally, this is a very good critique in terms of the Christian messianic expectations or claims. He says, you've divided between the messianic age and the Messiah. So, meaning, if you were to ask a Jew, what is Mashiach? Mashiach is the one who brings the messianic age. You can't separate between the two. So what's the messianic age? So it's the lamb will lie with the lion and peace on earth, and nations will beat their swords into plowshares and so on and so forth. So the Rabban turns and says, so you're going to tell me that Mashiach came 2,000 years ago, or at that point, 1,200 years ago, but any of the benefits of Mashiach we don't have. That's all for the second coming. Okay, very nice. So why do you think he's Mashiach if he didn't do anything Mashiach is supposed to do? So again, the whole thing comes absurd. And then in the middle of this, the Ramban says two things. One thing which is really attacks him, and he says, not only did Christianity not bring the Messianic age where swords were beaten to plowshares and so on, but he says that more people have been killed in the history of the world for Christianity than for any other reason. And don't start telling me that this is a religion of peace. It's like Islam today. It's a religion of peace. Okay, Baruch Hashem. Piece of you over there and a piece of you over there and so on. That's religion of peace. Said, Baruch Hashem. Then the Ramban says the important part, the reason why we went here. Then the Ramban says that the Messianic age will not only be peace and not only be political and not only will be spiritual, religious, but he says something else is going to happen. He says that when Mashiach comes, and he's quoting a couple of Midrashim and Gemara, he's putting them together. And it's the way he puts them together which is so interesting. So actually, part of it is Gemara at the end of Tainus. But he put together some other things. He says when Mashiach comes, the Kadosh Baruch is going to take us, and he's going to show us all of history, and show us every single event that took place in history, and show us why he did it. And then we'll be able to say on each and every event, oh, now I understand. I mean, part of it is based on Gemara Pesachim Daf Nun that says, in this world, whenever something good happens, we say Baruch HaTov HaMeitiv. If something bad happens, we say Baruch Dayan Emes. But in the future world, we're going to say Baruch HaTov HaMeitiv on everything. So what's the Pesach? You say Baruch HaTov HaMeitiv on everything. Certain things you have to say Baruch Dayan Emes. And the Rabban says, no. That in the future world, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows us each and everything in context and shows us why this happened, this when he explains history to us, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us, any of you like history? You know, if you study history? Forget it. If you don't like history, it's a little difference having your high school teacher and having a Kaddish Baruch Hu teach you history. When a Kaddish Baruch Hu teaches you history, not only does he tell you what, he tells you pshat in everything in history while you're able to say Baruch HaTov HaMeitiv, Baruch Hashem, in every single thing, which, by the way, I have to admit it. Right now, when I say these words, it sounds like this unbelievable leap of faith. All kinds of terrible things that happened to us in history, we're going to then be able to say Baruch HaTov HaMeitiv. So then I'm saying, that, the Ramban says, is real. That's the Messianic age. That's meant, and not just when there's no war, when we're able to look at every single thing that a Kodesh Baruch Hu did and say Baruch HaTov HaMeitiv. That's the real Messianic age. So what do I get from this? That the Messianic age is not just about political change in leadership. It's not just about geography moving from one place to the other. But what else is the Messianic age about? It's also about freedom, but freedom on a so much more profound level than you normally think of a freedom. It means emotional freedom as well. It means religious freedom to the extent that we're able to not have to make any leaps of faith, to absolutely understand how God is in our lives and doing wonderful, positive things at every single step of the way. Now, that's something which is very difficult for most people in this world to be able to say. Again, for us, it really is Baruch Tov HaMeitiv, and some things is Baruch Dayan Emes. But the Gemara says, no, in the future, it's going to be different. Now, just to understand the methodology, how we're thinking, how we're going now, if something's true in the future, so then more often than not, it's going to have its core already in the first Geula and leaving Egypt. So that's why it's, okay, now let's go back in Egypt. Is there such an element already there as well? So, let me, I don't know if you know where to start, because the truth is there are at least six different Gemaras that say what I want to say. And I'm just going to throw a couple of them, and we'll see. One, we'll start in the Haggadah itself. There's something in the Haggadah that we get fooled, because it sounds like it's supposed to be in the Haggadah. It sounds like it fits there, because you use the word Mitzrayim. Right? What does Benzom, what does V'loz Ben Azayir say? Hareini k'men shiv m'shana, v'loz z'chisi sh'tom mar yitiz asayim b'leilos, ha'chidorsha Benzoma, and so on. Nothing to do with Pesach. It's a mission in Brachos, Gemara in Brachos. What is Gemara talking about? What is he supposed to say? Two Prakam of Shema, three Prakam of Shema every night. Nothing to do with, what does it have to do with leaving Yidu? Yeah, it said the word Mitzrayim there. You can start saying a Briska Chakira and saying, okay, what exactly is the Chiyav on every night? Once I know the Chiyav on every night, then I can start into the Chiyav, the special Chiyav for Pesach night. That's very nice, but it's not Pshat and Haggadah. When the world is doing the Haggadah? And on top of all that, what does he mean when he says Hareini Kiven Shiv Mishana? What does Kiven Shiv Mishana mean? And I know the explanations as well as you do. So what in the world is it talking about? So again, why should I not say Yisus Mishana B'Leilos? Because they didn't leave until the morning. Right? They didn't leave until the morning. That's Pshat. Second Gemara. It's Gemara and Baruch doesn't have Dalet. Dalet and Beis. There's Machlokas over there regarding the sequence when you daven Maariv. Should you say Shema and its brachos before the Amidah or after the Amidah? There's machlokas to worry about this. What do we do, of course? We say Shema and its brachos, then we say the Amidah. So there's a sheet in the Gemara that says no. In the morning you say Shema, Amidah Shacharis, Amidah Mincha, Amidah Marv, and then Shema again. Shema should be the first and Shema should be the last. That's one sheet. The Gemara says it's not according to the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan. Because Rabbi Yochanan says that anybody who is somich ge'ula tefillah at night is ben olam haba. So again, I have to say, okay, why are you ben olam haba if you're somich ge'ula tefillah at night? It doesn't take such great dexterity to be somich ge'ula tefillah at night. What's so special? So, in the morning when we say the Berachah Kriya Shema, right after Shema, it's emes v'yatziv. At night we say emes v'emunah. Why? What's the difference? Why don't you just say the same brachos? Yeah? Correct. I mean, you could be walking down a beautiful street, the sun is shining, the birds are chirping, and everything sounds right. You walk down the streets, you feel good. You walk down that same street at night, you get a little afraid. The daytime is one of yatzivut, it's one of clarity. The night is a time that necessitates emunah. It needs faith. So what is Rav Yochanan saying? It's the same thing of Elazar ben Azariah. He's saying is that the person in the middle of the night who's able to sense the morning, that person's a ben olam haba. That person is kiven shiv mshana, which means, and I want to say this very, very, very clearly to make sure everybody has it exactly. The Ramban is talking about is emotional freedom. So the opposite of emotional freedom is emotional slavery. So I'm going to give you an example of emotional slavery today is depression. Now listen, very honestly, there's some cases of depression that need medication, that need professionals and so on. But philosophically, I'm not talking medically, professionally. Philosophically, what's depression? It's something happened in the past which now has conquered your present and you have no hope in the future. And the timeline here is very important. And what is the optimist? The optimist says, something bad happened yesterday, but that's not going to stop me from believing in tomorrow. It's basically, do I believe that what happened yesterday is destined to happen again tomorrow? Or do I believe that what happened yesterday has nothing to do with what's going to happen tomorrow? The person who has faith in tomorrow, so things are going to be good. The person who cannot believe in tomorrow, and they're stuck in the present because of what happened in the past. So I'm saying the time frame over here becomes very important, which is why it's so interesting that in the whole chapter here began, God says, I'm going to give you time. I think that what's going on over here in Egypt is that a Kadosh Baruch, and I'm about to show you something which is unbelievable, that actually says this, that Kadosh Baruch Hu was given the ability to celebrate leaving Egypt before they left Egypt. They're still there, but let's already celebrate. Okay, again, B'chol dor v'dor chayv adam l'ros atzo ki ilu hu yotza Mitzrayim. In every generation, a person has to see as if he left Egypt. So I can make a little bit of diuk, which is probably not all that good. Why does he b'chol dor v'dor? He says b'chol dor. So most generations, how do you have to see yourself as if you left Egypt? You go look in the past. There was one generation that in order to see themselves that they left Egypt, they had to look in the future. Why did they eat matzah that night? For the exact same reason that we eat matzah. And what's that? Because they're going to leave so quickly, they won't have time. And by the way, you go to the next pasuk, it says, again, you have to eat at Sliyesh. You guys know how to cook? What's special about Sliyesh? It's the quickest way to cook. Al tachlu menu na. Uvashem uvushal b'mayim. Uvashem uvushal b'mayim, you have to heat up the thing, heat up the pot, it heats up the water, then heats up the meat, and takes it in slow cooking. Put it right, the thing right, sliyesh, right in the fire, that's how it cooks quickly. Kim sliyesh. V'kachat akluso, mosneichem chagurim, na leichem b'ragleichem, rakleichem b'yedchem. V'chaltozem b'chipazon, pesachu l'ashem. The whole thing is about speed. Quickly, quickly, quickly. You're leaving. Put your coats on. Get your shoes on. Get your walking stick in hand. You're going. Which means their experience of eating it is supposed to be an experience of leaving Egypt. So how do you leave Egypt? You leave Egypt so quickly. How quickly? So quickly that it doesn't have time for the bread to rise. Do they have 2 weeks to prepare for this? Of course they have 2 weeks to prepare for this. By the way, just like we do every year, we have at least 2 weeks to prepare for Pesach. We prepare for Pesach and we still eat the matzah. We eat it. Well, how do we eat it? Matzah zu ashuma, because they left so quickly, no time for bread to rise. Which means they're eating it for the same reason, because they're told when it goes, we get out of here so quickly they don't even have time for the bread to rise. They're eating it. They believe that at that moment, and that's what's free, because they believe in the future instead of being tormented by their past. And that has to be a part of leaving Egypt. As I said, that's really when we become the makor for the Ramban. I want to show you a Targum Yonasan, which I think says exactly what I'm saying now, and to what extent they experienced this at their Seder that night. There's a very funny pasuk where pshat should be very, very simple, in Perek Yud Tes, Pasuk Dalet. Perek Yud Tes is the perek that they stand in front of Har Sinai. And we have Moshe, Pasuk Gimel says, Moshe Ola Elokim, V'yikroi Lav Hashem, Inahar, Lamer, Kol Tamar, Lebeis, Yaakov, V'tagil, V'nei Yisrael. Okay, this is what you say. So what's the speech? Atem re'item asher asiti l'mitzrayim. You saw what I did in Egypt. V'esa etchem al kanfei nesharim, V'yavi etchem elai. I put you on the wings of eagles and I brought you to me. What's pshat in this pasuk? Pshat. What's pshat? What's pshat in the pasuk?
I took you quickly
out of Egypt and took you right here to Har Sinai. That's pshat. Listen to the Targum Yonasan. And those of you who don't know, the Targum Yonasan is neither a Targum nor is it from Yonasan. Okay? You know that or no? Targum Yonasan is not like Onkelos. Onkelos just gives a Targum. Targum Yonasan throws in all kinds of midrashim when no one looks. It's also not from Yonasan, but in Zeal, it was really a Targum Eretz Yisrael, and it was originally in the manuscript. Tuf Yud, Targum Yerushalmi, and someone says, oh, it must be from Targum Yonasan ben Uzziel, but it's not. Okay, anyway. Everyone knows this. Right? Now you don't. That's why everybody knows it. Atun chamisun madi avidis lemitzroi. Right, you saw what I did to Egypt. Uta'inas yeschon alaninan. I took you on the clouds. Haika alga didit nisharim, which I put you on the clouds of glory, which are like the wings of eagles. Min Piluson vovilin yatchon, and I took you from this place called Piluson, and I flew you where? La Atar Beit Mikdusha. And I flew you over to the Beit HaMikdash, Le Me'evad Taman, to make in that place Pischa Vahulaila, to make the Korban Pesach that night. He's saying that Pesach night, God flew them first class over to Yerushalayim, to the built Beis HaMikdash, and they brought the Korban Pesach and the Beis HaMikdash. On the one hand, you can ask, how can you bring a Korban Pesach, again, difference between Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Chodorus. Pesach Mitzrayim, they didn't have a Beis HaMikdash, they didn't have a Mizbeach, they didn't have a... You hear what the Targum Yonasan says? What are you talking about? They had a Beis HaMikdash. They were in Yerushalayim. They brought it in Yerushalayim. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. Is this pshat? Is this pshat that they flew him to Yerushalayim that night? So I think the pshat in the Targum Yonasan is that's what they experienced. They experienced as if they were standing in the Beis HaMikdash, as if they were standing in the Mikdash in Yerushalayim Habnuya. They were standing there, and by the way, that's why that's so beautiful. That's what Pesach is supposed to be. You know, the whole first part of our Seder. What do? We go off into the past. We imagine that we were slaves. We eat the matzah, we try to make ourselves free. And what's the whole second part of the Seder? We start talking about the future. Right? Binyan Beis HaBakarov, build the Beis HaMikdash. He's saying that they experienced the same thing. They experienced leaving Egypt that night. That's what this Targum is saying. I'm saying that's why none of us unbelievable. I never saw anybody quote this Targum. So this is a present for you. You can say you found the Targum over here, Targum Yonasan. It's yours. I never saw anybody quote this. But I think it's unbelievable what he's saying. I don't think he's trying to tell you pshat in terms of a geographical truth, but I do think he's trying to express to us an emotional truth of what it was like. So I want to quote one last Gemara over here, the Gemara at the end of Makos. And everybody knows the Gemara, right? The Gemara is the Gemara with Rabbi Kiva and the other Chachamim. By the way, just about, I think the same Chachamim were there that night. And it says they get to Haaretz Sofim and they see the Makom Mikdash, they do Kriya. So then the Gemara says they all start to cry and he starts to laugh. Anybody remember the Gemara? He sees the fox and he says, why are we crying? We see the fox and he says, why are you laughing? So what does he say? The Nevuah of Uriah and the Nevuah of Zechariah. And now that I see the Nevuah of Uriah took place, and now I know that the Nevuah of Zechariah, what does he say? Well, what? It's going to come true, except for one problem. It's not what he says. He says, Miskayemes. Miskayemes is present tense. Rabbi Kiva does not say, because I was worried that wouldn't come true, and this one, and now that this one came true, I know the other one will. Everybody translates it that way. Will come true. It's just not what the words say. Rabbi Kiva says, Miskayemes. I don't know. Any of you know Diktuk? Sorry. Mitkayemet. What does that mean? That's better. What does that mean? Right now. So what in the world is Rabbi Kiva saying? He's saying you can't build the third Beit HaMikdash until you destroy the second one. So if you want to build a new house, what's the first step of building the new house? You got to knock down the old one. So therefore, Rabbi Kiva sees that even what everyone else is crying about, sees destruction, it's terrible. What does Rabbi Kiva see? That's the first step of the Gula. That's the Gula. Which means Rabbi Akiva is the, again, that's why he's always happy. That's why he's always smiling. That's why he's laughing. Rabbi Akiva understands everything I've said today. Rabbi Akiva understands perfectly that in order to be free, a person needs to have emunah. You have emunah, you can laugh in, no matter what the situation is, because you know what Kaddish Baruch is with you. Rabbi Akiva is not being tormented by the past. Rabbi Akiva believes 100% in the future. So much does he believe in the future. He sees it taking place right in front of him. And what everybody else may watch the exact same situation and cry, and what are you talking about? Rabbi Akiva sees, wow, this is wonderful. This is the beginning of the Gula. This is the beginning of the Gula. So I'm saying, this perspective is really unbelievable, but that's exactly what the Jews experienced that night. And that's what God is trying to get them to. And that's why he gives them a mitzvah of time. Because the mitzvah, he gives us time in order that we can have the ability of transcending time. He gives us the ability of time so that we can now control the past, present, and the future. That's the present he gave us that night. Which means, why give us that mitzvah in Mitzrayim still? Because that's what's going to get us out of Mitzrayim. Yeah. By the way, don't kid yourself. There was Sinas Chinam, the first base of Mikdash also. There was Sinas Chinam. As long as there have been Jews, there's been Sinas Chinam. We've gotten very, very good at it. What would Rabbi Akiva say? Rabbi Akiva would say, even if there was Sinas Chinam, even if his own students don't get along with one another, he would see glimpses of hope along the way that, no, we can get past this. And he did. He saw his students. Didn't make a difference. You know, we'll get past this. This is just silliness. This is silly. I mean, basically, he's like, don't you see? Don't you see? And everyone else was looking here. Where? Like, see what? Everyone else is crying. Don't you see? It's right there. God is already starting the process of the Gula. Problem is, he saw it. Nobody else sees it. That's the problem. What I'm saying is that this ability of seeing the Gula, of seeing how things just unfolded, already took place in Egypt. It took place that night. What did the Targum Yonatan say? Or, if you want to be fancy, the Targum Pseudo Yonatan say? He said that that's what they experienced that night. And I'm saying it's absolutely 100% true emotionally, religiously, and spiritually. That's what they experienced that night. They happen to still be in Egypt. What represents this? That's the matzah. And that's what the Zohar says. The matzah is a matzah of healing. It's a bread of healing. It's a bread which spiritually heals you. Because it's a bread which allows you to believe in the future. And I said that's what destroys us, is when we get stuck in the past, mistakes of the past determine who we are today. Instead of being free of the past and saying, I believe in the future, I'm going to rip away the past, it's not going to make a difference, I believe in what's going to happen tomorrow, rather than being tormented by yesterday, that's what liberation is. And that's what the Jews experienced in Egypt that night. And that is what's eventually going to become this great shear in history that God's going to give us in the future and show us. And we believe this. We believe it. We believe the time's going to come that we're going to say in every single thing, Baruch Tov HaMeitiv, and at that point we'll really be in the Messianic era. Tov.